That would be hilarious.
That's the way the episode should start. Just
it's just 3.5 minutes of lip smacking and then like, hello everybody, welcome, and just like never address it.
Oh no, I'm gonna address it. I just ate a ton. I have like head freeze too. A ton of sherbet. You called me and said you're ready. I thought you weren't gonna be able to do it tonight. So I have head freeze, mouth goop, and my tongue is a little numb too. So it was really frozen. Okay, so I don't know where you live at out there in the world, but Kersey and I are apparently living in a hell mouth. So recording before it's gonna hit. What is it gonna hit there? I think it's gonna hit 114 here.
I was going to give 112 here.
Wait. No, that can't be right. You can't be cooler than I am. Oh, that's right. You live right by the water, though. I live in the valley.
Yeah, man. I get the ocean breeze. Well, not really.
Well, sort of. Let's see. God, it keeps changing, too. It says... Okay. My fucking monitor's stuck. Never mind. We want to get this done before it turns into lava everywhere. Yeah, it says here 114 then 97 on Monday. So thank God I got to work. I got the weekend off, but I work on Monday. So, oof.
Monday will seem like a breeze after Sunday.
Yeah. Well, speaking of heat, we might as well start off with our first of three Stephen King adaptations in 1983, Cujo.
Yes.
Boy, that's... I don't understand how Dee Wallace Stone didn't become huge after this movie. How she got no nominations whatsoever. And the only thing I chalk it up to is disrespect of the genre.
I was going to say, it's a horror movie. It doesn't really get its due, at least not until more recently, when it's starting to be taken more seriously again. But.
Yeah. And the weird thing is, this, like Pet Sematary... are unique in that it really does feel close to the book instead of modifying it to make it more appealing to short attention span audiences. Because you spend a fucking hour of this movie before Cujo really lets loose.
Yeah, and then you also spend an hour in the car with the mother and the son.
Yeah, it does bounce around a little bit because there's the story of what is going on in her life, like... She has a husband, but she also has an affair, and he's starting to catch on. Cujo gets bit by a bat, and all this stuff is interlaced until her car is breaking down. She has to take it to this guy who owns Cujo, and that's where everything goes crazy. But we're also cutting back and forth between them being trapped in the car and then going out back to her husband, and he's trying to figure out what's going on with her.
Yeah, this movie scared the crap out of me when I was a little kid, and I haven't gone back to it until now. And I always kind of assumed that it wasn't really gonna that it was gonna be kind of lame and cheesy, but it still holds up for the most part.
Yeah, I think Lewis Teague, he had just come off of doing Alligator, which we did a couple years ago on the show, Trash Cinema. I think that he's really good with working tight budget and knowing he has to cut a lot. Angles in certain ways and moving the camera so that you don't get like that's a puppet dog, because they had to have used an animatronic or a puppet somewhere for sure. In there, and I think he does a very convincing job.
Yeah, and I think the strength of this movie and pretty much any Stephen King adaptation. I mean, not literally everyone, but most of the greats have a very simple but engaging premise, even by today's standard with The Outsider on HBO. That was a fantastic series. But the simple concept is a family drama for like the first half, and then you enter in the more mystical or terrifying elements of it that act as kind of like either a metaphor or... just a way for you to like really empathize with the family first. Like, it's always the characters first. It's not the horror.
So you understand the hell they're going through and you care.
Yeah, I mean, the first half of this movie is just a family awkwardly going through life with this huge secret that's hanging over them, that the wife is cheating on the husband. And you can tell that people kind of know, but they just won't admit it to each other.
Yeah.
Until about the halfway point when everything kind of comes together. Like, there are all these separate storylines about them. Like, their car constantly breaks down, so they have to go find someone who can do it right away because they need it, because it's the family car. And that's the person that owns Cujo. And so they need the car right away. Cujo's bitten by a bat and is now rabid. And so it just keeps like building on these elements until the last half of the movie, when it's just Cujo eventually is completely rabid and is just trying to kill everything.
Yeah, and there's also the B story of what's going on with Cujo's family. You know, the guy is abusive and he's whittling away his days, getting drunk and being mean to his family and working on cars. And there is a moment in the movie which is kind of terrifying, is when Cujo's starting to change and he goes up to his, I guess, boy. I don't know how you say it. And not his master so much, because that's more of the father. But he goes up to the boy, and you think that he's going to destroy this child. Because Stephen King does not shy away from killing children. And it's this moment where the dog still recognizes who he is and his relationship to that child, and he walks away. But by the time that we get to Dee Wallace and her child, he's completely gone by that point, and he also doesn't have that emotional connection.
Yeah, and another layer on top of this that I really appreciated is the sort of slow time bomb element of them being stuck in the car at the halfway point of the movie with a heat wave going on.
Yeah.
So not only is it like intense because the dog will not let them out of the car, so they have to be in there, but with the heat wave, they're getting dehydrated really quickly and they're starving. And of course terrified, so all of these elements just keep compounding on each other, and there's this sense of desperation.
Yeah, well, the genius,
that really builds.
The genius move is that she can see whatever she needs to survive within, you know, just it's right there, but she cannot get to it. Either it's the phone, you know, the cop car, the baseball bat, it's all right there, but it's just with, you know, out of her grasp.
Yeah,
I think it's a really well-made film, and he would re-team with Stephen King again for Cat's Eye in 1985, which I can't wait to discuss.
Yeah. Oh, is that the one with the weird little elf with the knife in the wall?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's awesome.
Cujo makes an appearance in that also. He's in the very beginning as he's running down the street. I guess it's supposed to be a prequel or just a little joke thrown in there.
Oh, nice. It's connected worlds before Marvel did it.
Well, and what they have that show now, right? Where they combine all the Stephen King stuff, Castle Rock.
Castle Rock, yeah.
I haven't seen it.
I have never seen an episode.
Yeah, this is really the heyday of Stephen King, because '83 is when real studios with money are going to push, you know, his stuff forward, and it would be kind of a mixed bag after this. Like some of the smaller companies would get, you know, stories that weren't so much, you know, above the line. Like Children of the Corn, it's campy and it's fun, but it's not anywhere nearly as good as these three.
No, and I'm a huge defender of Children of the Corn. I think it's fantastic. But yeah, it's I enjoy it because it's terrible.
Yeah. So our second film is Christine. John Carpenter bounces back from The Thing, which at the time was a critical cold reception, didn't do very well at the box office, and he wasn't completely on board with doing this. He doesn't necessarily want to tie himself to, you know, like someone who's also really well known. I don't know if it's ego or just control, but he knew he was in trouble, so he signed up to do Christine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yet again, it's John Carpenter, so you know you're in good hands. With a movie concept that's as silly as this, I really did not expect to like it, and I gotta say, it was really good.
Oh, you've never seen this before? Wow.
I think I saw half of it when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And it was not clicking for me, but you know, now that I'm older and I understand sort of like the dynamic that the main character is going through, it makes a lot more sense to me. It connects better.
Yeah, this one, it does definitely have John Carpenter's look. It's one of the few Stephen King movies that looks like a director. You know, like, a lot of them look like just normal everyday America. There's no real vision to it, but he's got the 2.35. He has his score. He has the lens flare. This is a John Carpenter paced, you know, it really is his baby.
Yeah, and he always makes the special effects incredible, at least early on. In like the 90s Carpenter, that's a whole different view.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised how many times they crumple and destroy this car, and it keeps like bouncing back, and the effects look great. It's just in reverse, but it looks fantastic. I can't imagine how many cars they had to go through.
Oh yeah,
to make the movie look this good.
Yeah, it stars Alexandra Paul, John Stockwell, and Keith Gordon, And frankly, Keith Gordon is really the only one who shows up to play. Everybody else is just like typical doll horror movie. Like, you could replace them with anybody. But Keith Gordon as our main character who loses his fucking mind. God, he is so good. And he only did a handful of movies before he stopped and decided to become a director.
Yeah, that's a shame. I mean, any scene without Keith Gordon is immediately drops in quality.
Yeah.
I mean, he really is the... I mean, no pun intended, but he's really the vehicle behind this movie.
Yeah, it's his obsession, his lust, almost. Like, you think he's going to stick his dick in that gas tank and fuck that car?
He did. What are you talking about? Like, he absolutely did.
Oh, God. And then I love how Christine communicates only through music. That's amazing to me.
Yeah, it's a really interesting element. It really does make you feel as though there is a connection between them. It communicates, it breathes almost. Like it's really interesting how alive they made the car. Like, the car has its own personality, and it's really interesting to see that evolve.
Yeah, it's there's a line in this I repeat to this day, is you can't polish a turd, kid. I fucking love Robert Prosky in this because he is just one of those greasy, no-nonsense, I ain't gonna tolerate your bullshit, kid. He's really hard on him, and I fucking love every second of his performance.
Yeah, but he's also a little bit soft, too.
Yeah.
And there is character there, and that's always a great thing about Carpenter's movies, is that there is, I feel like there is always a backstory to everybody in this world.
Yeah, like, I feel like he got screwed over so many times, that's why he has that defensive wall up.
Yeah, exactly. He, a very gruff and tumble guy, but, like, even when he's, like, being disrespected, he'll still play ball. Like,
yeah.
No matter how many times he'll, like, bark at you, he'll eventually roll over.
Also, I want to mention Roberts Blossom, who most people probably know as the old man next door, in Home Alone, plays the original owner's brother. And when he describes what happens in both the early story and the later story, it's kind of spine tingling. It makes your skin crawl.
Yeah, it is. Again, the themes that you're going to see in every Stephen King adaptation is, you know, going to be family drama. There's going to be a child murder or a killing of some kind. And usually making fun of religion, but, you know, that's his jam.
Also, Stephen King must have been bullied growing up horribly, because that is another thing that pops up in a lot of his books. It's like this, sometimes they come back. He must have had serious issues that he was dealing with through these characters.
Yeah, it's very evident that there's so many characters that are very similar in his writing. But also, his characters are also really well made for the most part.
Yeah,
he's not a horror legend. A horror legend for no reason.
Right.
He is a legitimately good writer.
Two of the most pivotal scenes, I believe, are the one where he finally kind of. Hold on, let me rewind a little bit. You know this when the bullies are all at the shop. And he,
yes.
You know, destroys them slowly one by one. But then he's on fire, and he's just going down the street. I think that's one of the creepiest things that John Carpenter has ever filmed.
Really?
I don't know. Something about the guy running desperately through the street, and you just see this flaming monster coming down or whatever, and just runs him right over, like as if it was absolutely nothing.
Yeah. And I was going to say, for, you know, usually writing an adult man... writing for kids usually spells disaster, but I gotta say, this is one of the more realistic, these are some of the more realistic conversations that I've heard in movies regarding people in high school. I've definitely met people who fit these stereotypes, or who have had, like, I've had the exact same conversations with people before.
Yeah, I was bullied constantly in high school.
Yeah, so... It feels a lot more realistic, even though everyone looks like they're 45.
Yeah,
that's another common trope, obviously. But I think the dialogue is pretty good for the most part. Like 80% of the time, I was pretty convinced that these are high schoolers.
Yeah, and I was gonna say the second really memorable scene is one you mentioned earlier, is after they just pummel the shit out of Christine and then pop 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 all right back to the way it was.
Yeah,
yeah. It sucks the life out of. Was it Artie? Artie's the main character? Yeah, it just, when he drops out as a dead carcass or whatever, you're like, oh shit, that's the car is like a succubus.
Yeah, it's a siren, you know, just draws in people and just absorbs
them. Okay, I never even thought of that before. That totally makes complete sense. All right, so our third and final film is Dead Zone. Now, a lot of people nowadays know that as the TV show that was on USA and forget that originally it was a film in 1983 with Christopher Walken. And they are similar, except the finale has changed so they can continue going on for 7 seasons.
My man Cronenberg, this is one of my favorites of his. I actually quote this one probably more than any other of his, which is mostly that scene where he smashes the table. It's like, the ice is going to break. I love that scene.
It's this is Cronenberg really going for the mainstream as best he could without compromising his vision. Because you see, there's a lot. Earlier in the year, he had done Videodrome, and that's fucking weird.
Yeah, that is pure Cronenberg.
Yeah, it's all the body horror that he's known for. And this is the one, besides, I would say, Dead Ringers during the 80s is when he was like trying to go for more mainstream. But it has his cold, calculating, kind of disconnected... There are not a lot of relatable characters in Cronenberg movies. You're mostly there to observe this weirdo.
Yeah, another thing that I love about Cronenberg movies. None of his characters are real people. They exist in this weird sort of ethereal world that's just beyond our grasp.
Yeah, it's all dreamlike.
Exactly. And this one, he tries to connect the worlds between his and the other side. I think A History of Violence is probably his most successful crossing of those two.
Yeah, well, I think it's also his most successful at the box office. Maybe The Fly, I'm not sure.
Yeah, The Fly is also fantastic.
We'll get to that one.
Yeah, and that's very approachable. But this one is also fantastic. It is, I don't know how low budget it is. I'm going to assume it was made for like $30 because it looks really cheap. Like when they go to in the beginning of the movie where they go to the roller coaster, there's nobody there. It's completely empty. It's like a theme park with nobody there, no one even operating the ride. It's creepy.
Why are they going that time of year? It's clearly winter.
Yeah. It's Canada. It probably looks like that all the time.
Oh, yeah. Okay. The budget was $10 million. It made $16 million.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. It's a very oddly alienating movie, and I don't think it's like that on purpose. I'd like to give him credit for that, but it is like so cold and distant that it is really interesting to watch, especially the first half.
Well, and you can tell where they saw, hey, this could be a TV show, because the movie itself is very episodic. Well, probably the book. I never read the book, but I'm assuming it's also blocked out like that.
Yeah, it has like 4 different stories happening.
Yeah, like, which was your favorite?
Oh, it got to be the serial killer.
That's yeah, exactly. That's the same one that just sticks in my mind. And it's just, he kills himself in such an insane way, considering he's a cop and he can just blow his brains out. But he wants to know what it's like, I guess, for the girls that he killed. And I'm like, holy fuck, scissors.
Yeah, so for anyone who's unfamiliar, there are basically 4 different storylines going, kind of happening. The main character gets into a car crash, which leads to a coma. And when he wakes up years later, he kind of starts to realize that he has this ability that when he touches somebody, he can visualize either their suffering or the suffering that it would bring to someone else.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the first story, is him realizing his power and finding out that the doctor ran away. I think he was fleeing the Nazis.
Herbert Lom is kind of a classic old director. Most people know him from the Pink Panther movies. I think he's fucking phenomenal as his doctor in this.
Yeah, he was great. I love seeing him. And he brought such humanity to the movie, which is not usual for Cronenberg.
No. The weirdest thing is they give you a sense that there's something wrong with him when he is on the roller coaster, but it's not triggered until he goes into the coma. But I'm wondering if he ever would have if it hadn't been for the accident. Like, did he need trauma, like the way X-Men sometimes do? Or was it just going to be a eventual thing that controlled his life? It just would have taken longer.
Yeah, and also he was dying too, right? Like, eventually, like, that power is what what would have killed him in the end. Like, he was very rapidly, his health was rapidly declining.
Yeah. I think they, maybe, we're watching the TV show right now, and I'm going to guess they probably ignore that.
Yeah, I haven't seen the TV show, but... Anyway, second storyline is that he is helping a kid, because he, Christopher Walken's character is a professor, so he's just kind of helping a kid with, like, being his private tutor, and realizes that he's going to die by drowning, because being on the lake, and so that's when the ice is going to break. And so then he has to, like, save the kid, and then the third storyline is that there's a serial killer in the town, and they use him to track him down, and that's the best one, and it kind of should have ended there. Because the last storyline is, you know, the bigger implication that there is a politician who is going to basically launch the nukes and destroy the world.
Well, it's funny you watch it now, and you see, well, I mean, it's kind of, it's not new. I mean, there's always been those really aggressive personality types in politics who are more about fanning the flames instead of actually being a politician. They work off rage, which has become a really popular thing now, but it was kind of fresh for the 80s.
Yeah, it was definitely subversive for the time.
Yeah. I want to say real quickly, this is an anthology film that's not an anthology film, which is really unusual.
Yeah, this could have just been four different movies or four different TV shows.
Yeah, it's crazy. This is written by Jeffrey Boehm, who sadly passed away 20 years ago, but not really known for doing a lot of horror movies. After this, he would go on to do more popular, like, sci-fi fantasy stuff. He did Innerspace, The Lost Boys, Funny Farm, Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade, and Lethal Weapon 2 and 3. So Dead Zone is so wildly different from the rest of those.
I can kind of see elements of some of those movies in here. I mean, yeah, most of this movie isn't really horror, though. Like, a lot of it is just, it's mostly just drama.
Yeah, it's a character piece with a sense of dread.
Yeah, I mean, the first third of the movie, you know, like, him realizing that all this time is gone, and the person that he loved is now, like, married and has kids, and, like, there's no way that she's ever coming back, and he has to, like, live with that.
Yeah.
Through no fault of his own, and it's just how he has to endure, like, tragedy after tragedy of losing time.
And you're never, ever want to see Christopher Walken with his hair mushed forward like that ever again. The hairdo that he's had his entire career is the hairdo he was meant to have.
Oh, yeah. That's some good looking hair.
All right, so those are the three films that Stephen King had made in 19... Well, he didn't have them made, but you know what I mean. In 1983, so I don't know what we're going to do for the next one. I have a huge list we'll go through. Yeah, I don't want to tease you if we're not sure yet. So I'm going to just say, hey, have a good night. Check us out on Facebook under Video Night Podcast. Or not Video Night, I'm sorry. That's the other one. Hit Rewind Podcast. And Kersey, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. And try not to melt out there.
Oh, good Lord. I am going to sleep the entire weekend. I think I'll stay up all night watching movies that are about winter. And then just sleep all day with my air conditioner.
Sounds good.
I mean, I'm going to sleep with that air conditioner. I'm going to fuck it just like that car on Christine. It's going to be a new movie. It's going to be called The Blower.
Oh, God, no. Okay.
I'm fucked up. All right, everybody, have a good night. Out from the Justice League movie, am I correct? No, it's coming out tomorrow.
Yeah, 24 hours. Yeah, 24 hours for me.
Okay,
I'm actually going to see it tomorrow night. Yes,
you're going. Whoa, oh my God. You're one of those first showing guys. I am not a first showing guy. I'm not even a first month guy. Lately, of course, as you all know, if you listen to the show regularly or you listen to the comic book podcast we do, I take about 3 or 4 months until it hits video. Then I watch it. Like, I just watched Wonder Woman and Spider Man like 3 weeks ago. So
yeah,
I'm very behind.
It's all good, Michael. I can't hate you. Well, it depends on the movie. Like, if it's going to be something like Justice League or, well, not Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman I saw on the first day, Friday. And, you know, something big like that or Spider-Man, then, but, or anything involving Batman, I'll definitely go see.
Well, what I'm pissed about is I just read Entertainment Weekly and they gave away secrets from Thor, and I was fucking pissed. It's only been out for a week and a half. Assholes.
Bastards. I know. I saw that. I saw Thor as well. Oh my god, I loved it. Like, it was like a complete change.
That's good. Oh. Anyway. I don't hate Dark World, even though I can't remember a damn thing about it. I remember enjoying it. Maybe it's not as much as the first one, but I would say the first two are the weakest of all the Marvel movies. And then the third one, you know, it has a whole different pace to it. And obviously it's been much loved and it's getting great box office. Critics are digging it. I know a couple of people who are not fond of the comedy elements of it, but it seems like it's winning.
It's a Taika Waititi film for sure. I loved it. I felt like I was listening to watching Flight of the Conchords or something.
Really interesting, because it has like a New Zealand and Australia, they have a very punk rock vibe to, I can't talk today, I don't know what the fuck is wrong with me, punk rock vibe
it's
to winter. What they do, kind of a tongue-in-cheek, kind of like poking their nose, you know, at critics, and basically, you know, because they're a country of convicts originally, and it's like they're thumbing their nose at all the proper things in the universe. So Ozploitation films in New Zealand, you know, they have their own style and attitude, and it's kind of nice to see that Thor kind of gets a kick in the pants in a different direction.
Yes, and it's a good direction, too. And I absolutely love Tessa Thompson as Valkyrie.
And Valkyrie's a very obscure character. A lot of people do not remember her. She was part of the Defenders for years, and then she kind of disappeared, and it's kind of cool that they brought her into the movie.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I will spoil one thing for you. What? There was absolutely no Lady Sif. No mention. Like, she just wasn't there.
Huh.
Like, what the fuck? That was my only complaint.
Yeah.
Well, one of them. Well, yeah, that's about it.
All right, so we have the Justice League movie. Reviews are starting to come in. For the most part, what it seems to be saying is they get the characters right. There's lots of humor. There's a lot of heart. It's just maybe the action is filled with holes, and it's not exactly original and exciting, and the villain's a little dull. I don't know what exactly happened between Zack Snyder and Joss Whedon taking over, how much Joss reshot. But I do know from what they were saying is that originally Darkseid was going to be the villain. They took him out, which, God, that had to cost a fucking fortune, and made Steppenwolf the main villain.
Yeah, because Darkseid's a little too soon, honestly. Let's save him for last. Plus, also, as far as it goes, Joss Whedon only changed like 30% of the script. He could only have done so much instead of having to reshoot the whole entire movie.
Right, and Warner Brothers is notorious for doing massive reshoots. I think they're all for naught because I didn't like Suicide Squad. And I thought Batman versus Superman was a big bag of ass. I know people who like it. I know that you enjoyed both movies, even though you said they were flawed. I feel like they have a budget in mind, and then they have like a backup budget in case something gets fucked up. So they have like an extra $50 million just laying around for each movie.
Yeah, but however, even though the critics didn't like them, they did make a shitload of money.
Yeah, that's true. But you know, in the end, they're not going to be. I don't know. I've noticed that some movies that don't make a lot of money end up being huge fan favorites, and you having a cult audience that people still talk about. Rocketeer. People still talk about the movies like Tremors.
The Shadow.
The Shadow. Well, The Shadow was kind of a flawed movie, which was, it was a 50-50 shot. But I think what is going to give it life and have eventual sales is just having a really strong direction. Not this fucking homogenized bullshit that's going on over at DC, whereas Marvel's got it right. They do have a outline plan, like you gotta hit these notes here, but they kind of pick these directors that are off the beaten path. They're gonna bring something fresh and new. Will it piss off the fans? Sometimes. Iron Man 3 is one that a lot of people hate. I don't give a shit. I'm a big Iron Man fan.
I don't get it
either. I was not bothered by it. It was the original exciting twist. And I was like, well, you know what? I got the comics, and the Mandarin is fine the way it is. And plus, they revealed the Mandarin is not the Mandarin, and that there is maybe another Mandarin out there.
Possibly, maybe. Who knows? But it would have been cool to think Ben Kingsley is an awesome actor, and from the part he played within the movie, he kicked ass at.
So the characters in the movie, real quick, are not lined up with what we know from the comics, unless it's the most recent 52 reboot. It's also not from the cartoons. It's kind of a mixture of characters. The closest I think you get is, I believe, Superpowers. The Galactic Guardians is the closest they ever got to what we have now. Not 100% sure if Aquaman was still part of the team then, but I do know that's when Cyborg and Firestorm were added to the team. So we're getting there. What is your core Justice League team?
Well, the core Justice League team for me was, Firestorm was definitely one of them from when I was a little kid. It was, you know, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, the top three, along with Green Lantern, Hawkman, and Flash.
Yeah, my core group, mind you, I did watch Super Friends and Super Powers, but they didn't...
Oh, God, Wonder Twins.
The Wonder Twins. what connected was the 1987 reboot. You and I talk about this a lot because, you know, we joke that we are the Blue Beetle and Booster Gold of podcasting, but that's my team. That's the one with Captain Marvel, Batman, Guy Gardner, Blue and Gold, Fire and Ice, and Martian Manhunter.
Wasn't there another one during the Death and Return series? There were some more kind of obscure, weaker tiered.
There was. The Justice League team always had fluctuations in their members. The funny thing is, most people think the Justice League is the Big Seven. It wasn't. If I remember correctly, it was Flash, Green Lantern, Black Canary, Aquaman, Martian Manhunter.
Wildcat?
No, that's just Justice Society. Hold on. Original. I love Google. I fucking love Original Justice League team member. All right. I feel like Elongated Man was one of them, I think. I could be wrong. But there have been so many iterations. Okay, the original, that is bullshit. This is not right. It says here, the original members were Batman, Aquaman, Flash, Green Lantern, Martian Manhunter, Superman, Wonder Woman. I am certain that Black Canary was on this
team. Yeah, I'm thinking that she definitely was there at some point. She did have an appearance in Justice League Unlimited.
No, it says here, and 1960, those are the right team members. Those are the seven. I am shocked.
Oh, my.
I could have swore Black Canary's part of it. Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern, Aquaman, and Martian Manhunter. Martian Manhunter being the one that's kind of like a C-level. He has a fan following, but he's never really been able to carry his own title. And for the most part, he's kind of a cult. He's not a household name.
Not until the, I think, the first season of Justice League came out.
No,
Yeah, it was based around him. They definitely, you know, Bruce Timm and Paul Dini, the ones who'd worked on the animated series of Superman and Batman as well, they decided to give someone else a little bit more depth. They saw the potential of what he can do. And, yeah, it was the first two-part episodes, the origin, were... like revolved around him, him being the only one. It was very tragic, very sad. He's the only Martian. Everyone else he knows is dead. It just plucks your heartstrings, just like the fucking baby doll episode of Batman.
And the Justice League, those first two episodes are a love letter to the relaunch of Justice that Grant Morrison wrote. And in the 80s, they were kind of a hodgepodge team. It was more about their lives in relation to the superhero world. And then it was starting to move. Like you said, you read it when it was around the death of Superman time, which was 93, 94. And a lot of the characters had changed out. And... the series got to the point, I would say, around 95, where it was getting ridiculous. He had, like, the worst... whoever was hot at that moment, that was it. You know, no real core. I think you had Wonder Woman, and then just, like, all C and D-level characters. I think at best you had the Ray. The Ray is a forgotten, phenomenal superhero that has just been kicked to the side. But I heard that he has a cartoon coming up. It's, like, the Ray and the Super Soldiers or something like that. Which is going to be an animated series on the CW.
Oh, yeah, like when they did the Vixen cartoon.
Yeah, so I saw a bit of it. I don't know if it's just a test trailer or that's a completed thing, but back to what I was saying, though.
Wow.
Yeah, so 95, sales were terrible in Justice League. There was, and it was stretched out too far. There was Justice League Europe, Justice League America, which originally was Justice League International. There was Justice League Task Force, which was like the badass version where they gave Booster Gold this big armored suit. And Blue Beetle, for some reason, inverted the black and blue, so it was more black than blue. It was extreme with Captain Atom and stuff like that. It wasn't, it wasn't very good.
It was too much like, he wanted to be too much like Batman because Batman wore black. And
right. You know what? No, I'm sorry. That was Extreme Justice. I forgot. Extreme Justice. Okay, so this is how the core team, sorry. Justice League America, that is your core team. Justice League Europe, of course, is like the seven guys that were shoved over to Europe to do international affairs. Justice League Task Force was Martian Manhunter, and like he got like four or five real low-level nothing characters. And then there was Extreme Justice. That's the one that I was talking about with Captain Atom, Booster Gold, Blue Beetle, and I can't remember anybody else.
Oh, okay.
And I kid you not.
Okay, cool. Awesome.
There was Justice League Antarctica. It was a joke, but it was there.
So they're basically like the members of the Justice League that nobody gave a shit about. They
Put them in Antarctica. It was bad. You know, Justice League Antarctica is just like the outcast. They basically just sat in a watchtower covering information for the entire world.
You might as well have had fucking Looney Tunes monitoring that station. It's like, fuck it, let's just bring in the Looney Tunes. We'll make them part of the Justice League.
You're not far off. Let me see if I can find who the members were in Antarctica. All right, just I know Gnort was one of them, which is a Green Lantern, which is the dog.
Everybody's got to have a dog. Shit, you know, there's Crypto, there's Gnort. Does Batman have a dog? Well, in Batman Beyond, he does. Max.
Dude, I don't recognize any of these people. It's called Justice League Antarctica. It was the Justice League America annual number 4 in 1990. And you know how, I don't know if you've seen it, but the classic photo was always the cast looking forward up at the camera. And Justice League Antarctica, someone screwed up and shot them all from the back. I'm going to send you a photo.
So it's like, okay, do so. Honestly, when you say that's like them looking up the camera, they're probably like looking up at the camera like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
This is it?
I got to show you photos of. Yeah, it looks like the Injustice League, honestly, because they all look like villains. Yeah, Justice League Antarctica is a goofy idea. But so yeah, in 1996, they decided to overhaul everything, call it JLA. Brought in the core team. Of course, that core team changed numerous times. So Justice League is always a fluctuating team, but I think your generation probably is stuck to this Justice League. This is the 2001 core team. And, you know, Kevin Smith talked about it. When they made the Fantastic Four... Sorry. Oh, my God. I can't believe I just did that. The Green Lantern movie. Why is it exactly they went with Hal Jordan, who wasn't even present in the comics at the time, or... No, wait, I think that he had been rebooted. He had been brought back.
Yes, he did.
But for most people, they know John Stewart. So why is it they didn't cast, like, Tyrese Gibson or something, or Common as Green Lantern, and go in that direction? Because most people know that character.
It would have been awesome to have Idris Elba, but he was picked for Heimdall for Thor.
Oh, that would have been really, really good. But I've heard that Green Lantern... It's weird the Green Lantern is not going to be part of Justice League. But, you know, I think it's because they're planning on doing what they said was, like, the lethal weapon in space, basically, with the Green Lantern core movie.
Yeah. Oh, my God, that'd be so awesome. I'm not gonna fucking lie. That would be great. But what about Armie Hammer's part? I'm like, because there's rumor. I mean, he's definitely gonna be in a DC movie. We're just not sure who he's gonna play.
Why do you know this? Nightwing? Why do you think Armie Hammer's in it?
Well, no, there were speculations and rumors that he was, like, on set of Justice League, and he's in talks with Warner Brothers.
Well, you know, he was originally supposed to be in the Justice League movie before this, the one that George Miller was doing. He was going to play Batman.
Oh, that's right, he was. And Common was supposed to play Green Lantern, but that went to shit.
Yeah. Writer's strike and insecurities in the staff running Warner Brothers. Didn't want to sink $200 million into a movie they didn't think was going to fly. Little did they know that superhero movies were going to explode.
Yeah, but now they've had huge success with the Dark Knight trilogy by Christopher Nolan. And, oh yeah, that's all right. That's why they didn't get the Superman Returns sequel, because of, you know, the writer's strike and contracts coming up and all.
Yeah.
The failure of Justice League.
Let's look at the cast real quick. So we have Kevin Conroy, of course, Superman the Animated Series and Batman the Animated Series and its, you know, iterations, you know, Batman and Robin, stuff like that. They automatically lead into Justice League, which is weird because most cartoons ditch its previous incarnation and start fresh. But Warner Brothers respected the fans and let Bruce Timm and...
Paul Dini.
Paul Dini, thank you. Shit. Continue the storyline, and this would go on for years. It's amazing how that world continued for more than a decade.
Yeah, for sure. Oh God, I know. That's what I was hoping the buildup would come to, especially when I was a kid, when I'd see the Adventures of Batman and Superman, like, oh, they're teaming up, and then they announced that they're going to do Justice League, and I'm like, no fucking way.
Yeah, I was very excited. My parents had a party that night, and I just skittled on out when this debuted, and I was up in my room watching it.
I don't blame you. But yeah, no, and it was like a huge success. I fucking fell in love with it. And it did kind of throw me off because, you know, I'm a kid. I wasn't as, like, open-minded when it comes to, like, you know, predictability or certain plots. But I actually thought Batman died in that first episode. I was like, no fucking way. They got to bring him back somehow.
Yeah.
But lo and behold, nope. Martian Manhunter got his back and Batman fucked shit up.
So we have Kevin Conroy continuing as Batman, who honestly is the epitome of the Batman voice. It's weird when other people take over and it doesn't feel right.
Like Bruce Green. Well, Bruce Greenwood, I thought, kind of held up in Young Justice and another. Oh, yeah, Under the Red Hood. And then there's, of course, the other one they have who's done.
Well, Diedrich Bader did Batman Brave and the Bold, which I kind of get because it's more of a comedic tone.
Yes, of course. Yeah, that's for sure. That's what I was going to mean. But Jason O'Mara, he does kind of hold up. But not, it's, I'm sorry, it's just, I need Kevin Conroy in those movies.
It's amazing. There's a TV show called Tour of Duty that lasted for 3 seasons. He's only in the first season. But it's funny seeing the real person, especially so young and so skinny, and that voice coming out of him. And you're like, could you put on a mask? Could you just, I need you to put on a mask. I know it's the middle of Vietnam War, but go ahead. Just go ahead and put on the rubber mask.
Oh, I know. Yeah. And who do we have as the rest of the main characters? Wait, was it Tim Daly still or another voice actor?
Okay, so that's what threw me off because I thought it was Tim Daly the whole time. That's how much George Newbern sounds.
Newbern.
Yeah, of course, most people know him from Children or Father of the Bride. He was the husband. I'm trying to remember what else he was in. I think he just
Rebecca Madsen.
What's that?
He was the husband of Rebecca Madsen. Shit. Brad Paisley's wife.
Yeah, I can't remember her name. You got me. Susan Eisenberg is the one that I don't know. Actually, I don't know Maria Canales either, but Susan Eisenberg played Wonder Woman. I thought it was Dana Delaney for the longest time, and I was wrong. I believe she played Lois Lane in the Superman series. So I honestly, I have nothing on Susan Eisenberg. I look here, and there's not really anything I know her from.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, exactly. That's the first time I heard that Susan Eisenberg was when she did Wonder Woman.
We have Phil Lamar as Green Lantern. And Phil Lamar, I knew from Mad TV. He was on
Mad
there for
TV.
About 5 seasons. But then he segued over quickly to voice work, doing Samurai Jack and like 9,000 other voices. Was he Mojo Jojo? Am I wrong?
I'm not sure. He might have been. Let me check. Hold on.
Mojo Jojo.
Mojo Jojo.
That was pretty good, actually. There's a cartoon.
Thanks, that's right.
There's a cartoon that I want to do. That Phil Lamar was in. It was called Static Shock, which is from the DC Universe. I read the comics and I really enjoyed it, but I've never seen the cartoon.
Oh, it actually did. I thought it held up pretty well. It was pretty cool. I actually thought it was Black Lightning for the longest time, but no, it was Static.
Well, speaking of, Black Lightning is getting a live-action TV show. I'm going to tell you now that it's going to last probably 13 episodes. It doesn't seem like something that people are going to glom onto.
But Phil Lamar isn't Mojo Jojo. But hey, who knows? It might take off. Arrow... I haven't even watched the latest 2 seasons. I give it
they
up on it.
They need to wrap up Arrow. I think all TV shows should last 5 seasons. It's very, very rare when you're not repeating yourself or you're filling in holes. When you actually have a whole story that needs to be told in more than 5 seasons, I have serious, serious doubts. There's maybe 5 or 6 shows in history that necessarily needed 5 seasons, especially when it's 22 a season to 24. And Arrow has long outlasted its welcome. It's on its way to being the supernatural of the superhero world. It's like, dude, wrap this up. Move on to another superhero.
Actually put in some fucking humor.
Yeah.
Although, it's cool that they're introducing Mr. Terrific and a few other, like, street heroes.
That is kind of cool. But I feel like Legends of Tomorrow, Supergirl and Flash, now we have Black Lightning. We're in serious danger of overdoing it. I think people are starting to get superhero fatigue. I would say this right now. Once the 2 Avengers movies come out, that will be the peak point. After that, I feel superhero movies are going to be losing the massive audience that they get. It's going to be slowly dwindling down unless the superhero movie can reinvent itself. Like the way that Marvel's been really smart in picking movies that are wildly different. Oh, did you get a coin? Did you get a special coin?
Oh, yeah, for sure. No, that was just a notification. I think Snake's just trying to call me on the codec.
Oh,
this is Snake. I've entered the nuclear disposal facility.
But that's where I think we are right now. Back to the cast. Michael Rosenbaum, who I've actually seen live. He was at Comic-Con in Sacramento a few years ago. highly enjoyable, pretty much stole the entire day. And we had some big guests that day, but man, he really killed it. And he had hardly anybody in his audience.
Oh, yes, of course. Live-action Lex Luthor in Smallville.
Yeah, and a Hoosier. When I went to college, we went to go see a special sneak preview of Urban Legend. And in the newspaper, it said, congratulations to our hometown hero, Michael Rosenbaum, co-starring in Urban Legend. And that's the first time I had heard of him. I wanted so badly to say something to him at the convention, but I just couldn't bring myself to do it.
Oh, my God, that's right. He was an Urban Legend. He was that rich. He was that rich kid who had the poodle. Who found it dead in the microwave.
Right.
God.
He's the heart of the show. I absolutely... Well, The Flash is my favorite superhero next to the Robin character that Chuck Dixon created. That sounded awkward. But Jason Todd is a piece of shit. Tim Drake is the man. Tim Drake is the greatest Robin ever. Yes. And those comics are amazing. The Flash is second. I haven't enjoyed anything they've made since Geoff Johns left. But for a decade with Mark Waid and Geoff Johns creating the world that was of The Flash, amazing, just jaw-dropping.
Right.
And the TV show is great.
Oh, yes, it is. Dude, I love the TV show. I mean, that's the one DC show I really like get excited for. Legends of Tomorrow, I'm like,
I've made about eight episodes into Legends. I got to catch up. It's all Netflix. I just don't get around to it.
Oh, yeah, no, I understand. It's all good, man. I will spoil nothing.
Good, good, good.
But, of course, as far as it goes for The Flash... Oh! Early reviews for the Justice League movie, everybody's loving Flash.
Yeah.
Like, they can't wait to see more Flash. So I'm like, that's good. That's awesome. It just goes to show Ezra Miller did a great job.
I'm excited about Jason Momoa. His performance seems like it's going to be fun.
Oh, definitely. Well, that's what they're saying. I mean, it's overall getting a good review. It's, overall a good movie. It's a lot of fun to watch. Well, here's a funny thing. Flixster posted their Rotten Tomatoes score. It's at 48%. And then a couple minutes later, it was 51%. And then Rotten Tomatoes just got rid of it entirely. Like, they're waiting until midnight.
Yeah, tomorrow. I think those are the rules. If it's above 50%, I'm good. Other than that, lowered expectations, I guess.
Well, a lot of people are expecting, like, major newspapers, like, New York Post, Forbes, this and that, it's going to get, like, 65 to 70%.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, it'll still
so
be better than the TV movie.
I'm just so excited. I'll...
Have you seen the TV movie from 1997?
Oh, God, with fucking Miguel. He was in RoboCop.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, Miguel Ferrer.
Yes. Oh, my God. I saw that on YouTube. I was like, what the fuck
is
this piece
I've
of
seen
shit?
It. It's pretty bad. It's got to be better than that. All right, so to finish this up real quickly, Carl Lumbly was Martian Manhunter. Carl Lumbly, of course. A lot of people know from the TV show Mantis that Sam Raimi produced from the writer of the Batman movie.
Oh, yeah.
And Alias.
Oh, my God, that's right. Holy shit, I forgot why he sounded so fucking familiar.
Maria Canals, I don't know who that is. I have to look this up.
Yeah, no, I have to look it up, too. It's on the tip of my tongue.
No, I've seen her. She's in a bunch of TV shows and movies, usually like Disney, Nickelodeon kind of stuff, but she's one of those faces.
Oh, wait, no, now I remember her.
What?
The mother from Wizards of Waverly Place. My little brother and sister watched it all the time.
I've never seen it. I don't want to go into everybody that co-starred or guest appearance, because, my God, they got one hell of a cast to show up. That would take a year.
Especially in Unlimited.
Though I do enjoy that Steve McCaddy played Shade, which in the cartoon, he's a villain. He's part of the Injustice Gang, and I don't remember him being a full-on villain. In the comics, he's kind of just a gray character. So it's weird that in the cartoon, they automatically just make him a full-on villain.
Still, I mean, it gave him a little more depth, and he wasn't always in between. He actually picked a side. He's like, you know what? I'm going to go with these guys. They're pretty cool. They have some awesome benefits, and they get to have more fun.
So the Justice League movies have been pretty solid, don't you think?
Yes, they have. Oh, especially animated movies. Oh, they've been great. Justice League Dark? Holy shit.
Yeah, I just started watching that. I was like 5 minutes into it when you texted.
Yeah, no, dude, Matt Ryan, who played Constantine in the Constantine TV series, he comes and voices John Constantine.
Oh, nice, nice. DC does like doing that. They like to keep some consistency. What I love is that Thomas Jane was brought in to voice Jonah Hex, because originally he had been pitched to be Jonah Hex. And then the director said, nope, I'm hiring Josh Brolin. Then Josh Brolin got the director fired. And then it got a new director who was completely incompetent. So it all comes back around, and Thomas Jane was rewarded with the animated cartoon.
Oh, yeah, that's right, in that little short they did with the Superman Shazam team-up. It was a collection of shorts.
Yeah. I can't believe it's been 10 years since they started doing these direct universe. Well, I mean, technically the first one is Batman Mask of the Phantasm.
Yes.
But they're releasing a set of Blu-rays with everything that's been in the last 10 years of the DC Animated Universe. That set is like $250. So if you want a kid, you better save up some money.
Yeah, exactly. Or just ask for it for Christmas. Maybe your parents could spoil you if you've been good enough. Santa's not real.
Yeah, it's rich parents.
Oh, dude. Honestly, about the Justice League live-action movie, I ended up collecting all the little, like, 6-inch multiverse figurines. I love it that much.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, and I've completed Steppenwolf. He is gigantic.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't know who the hell Steppenwolf is. Seriously, Steppenwolf's in the cartoon, and he's in this movie. I don't have a fucking clue who he is. I've never heard of him before, and it's not like I'm a noob to the DC universe. I have no idea.
He's Darkseid's uncle. He's Apocalyptian. He's basically, I guess, trying to overthrow Darkseid, but failing miserably.
Huh.
That's what I'm getting in this movie. Oh, and I listened to the score by Danny Elfman for the movie. Oh, fuck. Oh, my fucking God.
Oh, wait, I thought... Okay, so Danny Elfman's doing the score. I didn't think that he was going to do it. I thought somebody else was doing it.
No, but Joss Whedon, even in an interview, Danny Elfman mentioned that Joss Whedon, when it came to this one scene, Joss Whedon just told him, dude, just Batman the shit out of this scene. And, dude, if you listen to it, you will hear, like, the theme from 1989 Batman, and then you get to hear a little bit of John Williams' Superman theme. I'm like, oh, my God. Oh,
so sweet.
Yeah. This cartoon gave so much depth to John Stewart, Green Lantern, especially in the Blackest Night episode where he's standing trial for destroying a planet by the Manhunters.
I can't remember if that's in the comic or not. I feel like that was a modified story that was from the comics. A lot of these are original tales that kind of like give hints of old school ones, but that one and the very first episode, they're almost directly from comic books. Below, they introduced Aquaman. This is when Aquaman was like, I still think it's fucking lame. They gave him a hook for a hand, they gave him long hair and a goatee. Woo!
And they made him savage. This was supposed to be the savage Aquaman. This is kind of like what the character design was for Jason Momoa's.
Yeah.
Minus the hook hand.
Yeah, I know.
He's got fucking trident, the Poseidon.
Yeah. Well, I mean, then they took his hand and they gave him like a weird water hand and then they gave him his hand back after he died. I enjoy Aquaman great. Even up to a couple months ago, I was like, yeah, what a loser. He sucks. He talks to fish. And then you actually read the comic, especially the ones of late.
Yes.
They're amazing. I'm jaw-dropping good. And I'm really enjoying them. And I don't know if you've noticed the picture that I posted about an hour ago, but our January episode of Comics on Infinite Earths is going to be about Submariner and Aquaman. And I think it's funny they both go savage around the same time. What original thinking there, people?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I thought Marvel borrowed a lot of ideas from DC and, like, kind of, you know, created their characters due to that. Especially, I mean, look at Namor. He's half Atlantean. He's like King of Atlantis. I don't think he talks to fish. I don't know why he even has the little wings on his feet. What the fuck is that shit?
That is weird, isn't it? Why is it these little wings so he can fly? Why would you need those? Those wings aren't going to help him fly. Submariner is actually older than Aquaman by a long shot, by 20 years.
Oh, he is.
Yeah, he was originated during World War One or World War Two.
Oh, okay. All right, that makes sense.
Marvel was going to make a movie with him, and David Self, the writer of Road to Perdition, was doing the script. But I think they did the budget on it, and this is like 10 years ago. And they said it's going to cost $200 million. And they're like, nobody even knows who the Submariner is. Let's shit can this right now.
Exactly. I don't even know if they're probably going to introduce him in the Marvel Inhumans show. Because he's like supposed to be friends with that aquatic guy on the Inhumans.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name for the life of me because I don't give that much of a shit about him.
I'll tell you this right now. I'm literally looking at a book that says Fantastic Four / Inhumans, the Atlantis Rising storyline. I tried to read it. It was god-awful shit. We're going to do an episode where we talk about Namor and Aquaman, but I'm going to guarantee that we're mostly talking about Aquaman.
Oh, yeah. Aquaman, he fucking dominates, it seems. I mean, honestly, people think he just talks to fish. I'm like, dude, he's got near Superman strength. He has very extremely fast reflexes and stamina. near nigh invulnerability, and he's got a magic fucking trident.
Yeah.
A power.
Well,
of a
also,
god.
Aquaman does not technically talk to fish. He's able to connect them on a subconscious level and kind of steer them in the direction that he wants to. But if their natural tendencies override that, then they're just gone. You know, they're not going to follow him. They're not going to do what he wants to do. Yeah. If they're scared, they'll take off.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Do you think he could be like an aquatic psychologist, you know, talking all the marine life? And they come up to him with their problems, and he's like, Jesus fucking Christ. So he's like, I ain't got time for this shit. I got to save the world.
He's talking to a shark, and he's like, why is it that you eat until you puke and then you eat again? Is there emotional problems? Did you have issues with your father?
It's like, oh my god, is your aquatic modeling like too much for you? Is that what it is?
Shoot. Andrew Kreisberg wrote for the animated series.
Holy shit. Well, that's pretty awesome. Damn.
So I think,
oh gosh.
So as of this recording right now, I only rewatched season one. I've seen it all, but I just recently watched season one. There are some standout episodes. There's some that were love letters to fans I couldn't get into, like the Etrick and the Demon. The Etrick and the Demon character is pretty cool, and it was drawn in the way that Jack Kirby drew them, but I could not get into it. I couldn't get into the Rex Mason storyline at all, you know, when he turns into Metamorpho. I do like the alternate reality one that Vandal Savage, where he's the main character. It's really connected to Legends of Tomorrow, where Vandal Savage is actually getting pretty tiresome. So.
Oh, wow, yeah. I mean, heck, even in the TV show, he's gotten tiresome. I mean, he's dead after one season.
I didn't know that. Thank you for ruining that, Jacob.
Damn it! Oh,
yeah,
fuck!
I've only had 2 years to watch it, so I'll shut the hell up.
Sorry. Okay, hey, it's not like I spoiled Star Wars or anything, okay?
Wait, what? What about Star Wars?
It's not like I spoiled Star Wars, like The Force Awakens, like when that came out 2 years ago, yeah. So there.
Dwayne McDuffie was a writer for the animated series and said that he died very young. He died at 49. He was a writer and producer, but a lot of people know him basically for Static Shock. Not a lot of people remember this, but there was a series of comic books that was geared towards, I say black, I know everybody says African American. I don't know what to say anymore because I then have some friends who are African American. They go, "No, I'm black," and I'm like, "Fuck, I don't know what to say." So I don't know what to say right now. Gentlemen of color, there's no way I can win this. Hey, in urban just sounds like you're condescending. So I don't know what the right thing to
Pretty
say.
Pretty much,
is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes when we say African American, it's just white people's PC compensation for not knowing. Like I'm sorry. Whenever they're saying, I'm sorry. I know there's a lot of pieces of shit in my race.
Calm yourself. Kamate.
What?
It's okay. Yeah, well, people of color was actually used as an empowering term back in the 60s, like during the Civil Rights Act, to empower themselves.
But, so that's awkward, everybody. So Milestone Media, they just had characters that were black. See, what if you're from England? You know, aren't we all technically from Africa? Because if you're a religious person, everybody was born there. So therefore, we're all descended from black people. Ooh, racist. Your minds are blown right now, aren't they? Jesus was not white. Jesus, there's no way he was white.
That whole Mormon Jesus. Oh, you know, dirt blonde hair, pretty blue eyes, pale skin in the Middle East. Bullshit!
What I think is funny is, the whole thing they're trying to do right now with Roy Moore, that governor guy that's running for office who's a pedophile?
All those idiots smashing their Keurigs in protest because they decided not to run their ads on Fox News anymore?
But here's the thing. Okay, so somebody made, like some high-end guy on the news made this argument. He goes, well, you know, Joseph was in his 20s and Mary was a teenager when they had their child. And I'm like, oh, hold on a second. Hold on. Listen to what you just said. If you are a Christian and you're going to follow that, then you have to say, oh, they never had sex, at least not for Jesus. That was Immaculate Conception. So therefore,
thought she was a virgin.
Right? So his argument is stupid. So therefore, of saying that a 20-year-old can sleep with a teenager because they had Jesus. Well, no, because did in the Bible, Jesus was an immaculate conception. They never had sex. So your argument is not only convoluted, it makes no sense, and just shut up.
And it collapsed on itself.
Yep.
Or here's Ann Coulter's argument. Oh, come on. JFK was 40 and he slept with a 19-year-old. She was a consenting adult.
Well, also, it's called whataboutism. Whataboutism is a thing that the right is doing purpose. They'll be presented with A, and they're supposed to respond to the question about A. But then they say, what about distracting away from A, and then they move on to B. And this is what they're doing.
Exactly, like if it's not a problem.
It doesn't excuse A or B, but A and B is not connected. So therefore, like say... They're saying, okay, so this guy here is a pedophile and he slept with underage girls or he molested them. They'll go, what do you think about that? And they'll go, oh, well, what about Bill Clinton? And they're like, well, okay, so wait, what? Bill Clinton is a different conversation altogether. Do not ignore A and move on to B without acknowledging A at all. You know, it's just so stupid.
Exactly.
It's called what about us?
I know.
And I don't
honestly,
know how do we get here?
I don't know, but these superheroes, if they existed in real life, they'd probably be shaking their heads. What the fuck are you doing? Get the fuck, you know what? Yeah. God damn it. Flash should just come in, punch him, just plant some drugs on him. Oh, look, she's got drugs on her. Arrest her.
Yeah, this is all my
fault.
Nobody
would be able to see him. He's too fast.
This is all my fault for not knowing what to say. If saying black isn't cool, let me know. I'll say African American. I don't know what to do. Okay, so Dwayne McDuffie created that character with Static Shock and Hardware and I can't remember the superhero, the Superman like character. But here's the weird thing is, Dwayne McDuffie died.
Adam Smasher? No.
No, he died like 6 years ago.
Captain.
No, it's okay. I'll figure it out. But here's the weird thing is Dwayne McDuffie is related to Keegan-Michael Key. But Keegan-Michael Key did not find out until just recently that he was his half-brother.
Oh,
He never got to know him, which is terrible.
Holy shit.
Right? Oh, it was Icon. Icon is the...
Icon! Yeah. That's what it was. Holy shit. Yeah, no. Oh, God. Icon's almost as powerful as him.
And I heard that they finally got put into the DC Universe, which is cool. Did I send you a comic book about that?
I think so. And he's also in Young Justice. He's the one... defending the Justice League when they're
nice.
Under question by these alien races. So, yeah, it's quite fucking exciting.
Okay.
And I'm like, good, this character does need more light shown upon him.
So, I have not watched season 2 yet, so I'm not going to discuss that because I need guests, you know, read an overview in Wikipedia, which is cheating. But I would like to come back in a couple weeks and talk about, honestly, of the two series, my preferred one is Justice League Unlimited. I love all the wild characters they would choose from. I mean, you're talking A, B, C, D level characters. And I mean, if you listen
Animal
to...
Animal Man.
I love the C and D level characters, even though it's hard for them to even carry a comic book for 24 issues. I adore those. They're the tendons, you know? They're the ones that hold the meat together.
Exactly.
I think probably my favorites, of course, is Blue Beetle is probably my A-list, Booster Gold. The Question is a highly underrated C-level character. Who were some of your favorite C and D-level characters?
Warlord was definitely one of them. Mr. Terrific. Yeah, that's right. They introduced Warlord in Justice League Unlimited.
Did they?
I haven't watched
that one yet.
Yeah. There's also Vixen and let's see who else. Oh, yeah, Green Arrow. Liberty Girl, the one with the wand, the big old cane. And, oh, gosh, Zatanna. They finally introduced her. I thought she should have been a huge part, especially when it comes to the magic.
Yeah, Zatanna, in my mind, is an A-lister. She has the power over all this magic. And for some reason, she's never been booted up into that level.
Did they rename him? His name's Apache Chief. Oh, yeah, he was one of the original Super Friends.
He was. There's Black Falcon, which is basically Black Lightning. I don't understand why they changed
it. Black Condor.
No, Black Condor is... Oh, it's Ray and the Freedom Fighters. That's going to be the new cartoon. Black Condor is going to be...
Yeah.
Oddly enough, Black Condor is white. Or, no, he's Native American. He's Native American.
What?
Yeah, Black Condor is Native
American.
What
the hell? I was like, they better not have whitewashed him. That is fucking bullshit.
So it's Black Falcon, Apache Chief, and...
Uncle Sam?
No, it's like a samurai. I think there's a samurai character in there.
Oh, man. Yeah, I know. But, oh, yeah, they even brought in Orion, too.
I do. Yeah, I like Red. I like Red Tornado. He's going to be, I think, part of the Rey animated series as well. Red Tornado is a serious hero. No one ever pays attention to him.
Well, I mean, he did. He was the liaison for Young Justice in the first season. He's the one who watched over him and trained him.
Oh, Young Justice. Yes, mm-hmm. I forgot. Yeah, because in the comic books, that's what he was, their leader too. There's a joke in a Harvey Birdman Attorney at Law where Apache Chief gets coffee on his lap, and while he can enlarge in, his little Mr. Apache cannot. So he sues, and Black Vulcan comes in as a witness, and he has an interaction with Harvey Birdman that just kills me. Let me see if I can find it.
No, yeah, for sure. God, there's some other characters in there, too.
Oh, here it is. Here.
I mean, heck, even...
State your name for the record. Black Vulcan. Mr. Vulcan.
Hey, Phil Lamar.
Tell us about your superpower. Pure electricity. Ooh. In my pants. Sorry. Tell us, what would life be like without your powers? Well, you know how it is when the power goes out in your house? It would be like that, only in your pants. Indeed. You know, witness...
Isn't it true that the reason you left the Super Friends is because you were fired? Fired? Fired! Why?
They said it was some sort of budget thing. But I think it's because I complained that they're always pairing me up with a white super friend. Like I was gonna start super looting the minute they weren't watching. And you think I named myself Black Vulcan? Hell no. I used to go by Super Vulcan. Black Vulcan was Aquaman's idea. And I said, well, maybe we should just call you Whitefish.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. Yeah. Now... Okay, I remember another one, Mr. Miracle.
Mr. Miracle's great. That's another Jack Kirby creation. He was one of the new gods. He had a series in the late 80s as well. Him and Dr. Fate, Blue Beetle, Booster Gold, Captain Atom, Starman, all of them got like these decent runs, you know, 24 issues to about 50. And no one ever talks about him anymore. But Mr. Miracle, man, his series was really clever. And his wife, Big Barda, they're two highly underrated heroes.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I know. I do want to see a little bit more of them. I mean, they had a great appearance in, I think it was the Superman, Batman, oh, God, it's the one where Supergirl arrives. It was one of the animated movies. But Big Barda is definitely one of the characters that shows up.
I didn't realize that was also, in one of the animated movies, huh?
Well, Big Barda was, for sure, I remember. Okay. I'm not sure if Mr. Terrific was there. But also, as you mentioned earlier, The Question's another one of my favorites because, you know, someone a little more ground level, another detective, a little bit more obscure and somewhat... A little close to Rorschach, but not Rorschach.
Rorschach
was based off of.
Right. We talked about this before, how the Charlton characters were bought by DC. Did we accidentally just cover Justice League Unlimited? Fuck it. Let's just go ahead. Justice League Unlimited. we do this sometimes.
There was one episode that's completely based off of an Alan Moore story.
Yeah.
For the Man Who Has Everything. That I thought was... Oh my God, I absolutely love that episode. You know, it's, you know, Superman, he is somewhat at peace. He's loved. He's like, he's on his home world. You know, he has everything, a wife, a child, even though it's a little strange, even though he feels like a little strange because he's like, wait a minute, something's just not right, but hey, I'm happy. And then it just gets all torn away from him and he just gets completely enraged and fucks up Mongol. And then, of course, it gets lashed onto Batman, and then Batman, you know, sees his dad be a hero. You know, his parents are still alive. And then, bam, it. Back to reality. You're Batman. It's cool.
You know what's funny is I was watching the Justice League series, and the one episode that really stuck out was the World War One. Or you know when Superman gets put in that Mongo's little gladiator fights. Do you remember that one?
Oh yeah.
And there was a guy there with a really raspy voice, and it was really cool. I like his voice, but then I saw who it was. It was William Smith. Now nobody really knows who William Smith is, at least our age. But you might remember him as Conan's father at the very beginning of Conan the Barbarian, who teaches him the Riddle of Steel.
Oh, wow.
The guy is enormous.
So that's who he was.
Yeah, and it's something, I don't know if he has throat cancer or he smokes too much or what's wrong with his voice, but it's completely changed now.
Oh, wow. I'm trying to think, which episode was that where he gets captured on Warworld?
Well, if I hadn't just closed down that window, I would have told you. It's I can't remember. But Mongol's the villain, played by Eric Roberts, who does... exquisite job playing Mongol. It's real slimy.
Right.
The Unlimited series. So the main characters we get Amy Acker as the Huntress. Amy Acker's from Angel. She played Fred. Adam Baldwin, also from Firefly, another Joss Whedon show. Guest appeared on Angel the last season. He played Green Lantern this time. He played Jonah Hex and Rick Flagg. Wow, this is like all Joss Whedon people. Mirena Baccarin played Black Canary, who a few years ago was kind of being teased that she was going to be Wonder Woman, and then they didn't accept Joss Whedon's script, and therefore she didn't get to play. But she would have been excellent Wonder
Woman. Oh, I'm not going to lie about that. Yeah, she would have kicked ass. I mean, she definitely would have gotten to shape. She knows action, especially after Serenity. But instead, she got to be in Deadpool, but she's not playing Domino, which I don't mind. I mean, the actress that's playing Domino looks amazing.
One of my favorites from the show, Jeffrey Combs played The Question. He was also in the Batman the Animated Series, I think, as Man-Bat. Jeffrey Combs is from The Reanimator, and a lot of people remember him as the crazy FBI agent in Frighteners.
Oh, shit!
Yeah.
I never knew that. All right, I'll have to rewatch that.
Trying to find anybody else here of note. Alexis Denizov played Mirror Master. He is also from Angel. What, did they just go to Joss Whedon and say, hey, can we have all your people?
Pretty much. That would have been some ideas. I know. Yeah. Do they want to be a part of this? You know, give them something to do in the meantime?
Yeah, Nathan Fillion played Vigilante in The Spy Smasher. Nathan Fillion, did he do Green Lantern in one of the later iterations?
Yes, he did, especially in a few of the animated movies, Justice League Doom, and he also played him in Throne of Atlantis, and I think there was another one he did, but honestly, Flashpoint, he did that one too.
Okay. Mark Hamill comes back as the Trickster, which is a homage to his role in the Flash TV show. We have Michael Ironside as Darkseid, who is perfect, pitch-perfect casting on that. That is amazing.
Oh, yeah, with someone like Darkseid, you need that kind of voice. I mean, I'm not even sure who they're going to get for the next Justice League film, but I'm pretty sure they'll do great. I'm
trying to find anybody else here. Captain Marvel is played by Jerry O'Connell. I did not know that.
Oh, that's right, yes. There was that episode Clash. That's another one of my favorites. I mean, honestly, I cannot wait to see his movie. I mean, Zachary Levy's been cast as Shazam, and he's definitely got to bulk up in order to match The Rock. Yes.
Ron Perlman played Orion, which everybody loves Ron Perlman.
Yes.
Shit, Ron Perlman could play Orion in the live-action film if he wanted to.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, shoot, he wouldn't have to, like, you know, they wouldn't have to do too much age makeup on him, make him look younger. No, he'd be perfect.
Here's another great one. James Remar from The Warriors and 48 Hours.
Warriors,
and, like, 9,000 other movies. He played Hawkman.
Yes, that's right. He was. He's the one who approached Hawkgirl about her origin, and that there's destined to be in love, which wasn't true.
I don't know who Scott Rummel played Aquaman. I have no idea who that is. But Tom Everett Scott from That Thing You Do and American Werewolf in Paris played Booster Gold.
Yes. Oh, that guy's awesome. He's pretty funny. He does have great comedic timing for sure.
Well, I'm kind of tired of talking about all these people, but there's some really great, all these characters and stuff like that. I'm surprised how many characters showed up that were never even had a voice. Plastic Man, The Ray, Starman, Vibe, Owlman, Dr. Midnight, Creeper. Creeper is a great character. I can't believe that's never had anybody actually voice him.
Well, hopefully eventually they'll get him somewhere. Like, if they ever do another Batman animated movie, hopefully he comes in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know where we're at, because, see, where does Justice League go after this? After Justice League Unlimited, that's done, right? But then it gets rebooted.
Yeah,
and there's Justice League Action. There's Batman Brave and the Bold. There's, I think, Batman Strikes or something like that, which is more of an anime version, which I thought looked stupid.
Yeah, I don't know. Gotham Knight was great, but I'm not sure about Batman Strikes.
Jeff Masuda. I know people love his artwork. I fucking can't stand it. It's so poppy anime. I don't like it. His version of the Joker is shit. But that's where we were like 10 years ago. All of a sudden, everything.
Look it up.
Yeah, like 10 years ago, everything had to have this like anime look to it, and I just, barf.
Yeah, but now, like, some of the animated movies they've done, too, like, they still have, like, a little anime flair. I think that's where they get a lot of the animation done.
Yeah, I don't like the lighting scheme of a lot of the hardcore anime stuff. It's way too fluorescent light,
shadowy.
Is what I want to say. Shadows and fluorescent lights. It's the rich color's gone. Everything's kind of washed out.
Mm. I don't know, but these latest ones, though, like Justice League versus Teen Titans or... Oh, God, what was the other one I watched? Oh, yeah, Teen Titans, you know, Blood Contract. A lot of these ones, they have, like, there's less shadows. It's definitely a lot more brighter and more colorful. Yeah. So, you know, that's something to look forward to.
What was the Teen Titans one? Did you say Judas Contract?
Judas Contract. Yeah, I said Blood Contract, which, well, it involves Brother Blood anyway, so I'm kind of right.
Oh, I didn't know they made a movie of Judas Contract. I somehow missed that. They're making a lot more Justice League movies than I thought. I remember them saying they were going to do it, but it got canceled. Let me see if this actually came out. I want to see. Or did you see it already?
Yes, I did. Dude, it's fucking great. It makes me fall in love with Teen Titans.
Yeah, well, DC
said... Nightwing fucking...
They said DC, that there wasn't enough interest in the Teen Titans to do it, but oh, am I so happy. Oh, I like it. I like it. It looks good. You got Deadshot.
That was a lot of crap. Who isn't interested in the Teen Titans?
So I, at home right now, I have Justice League Dark and Throne of Atlantis that I need to get through. I realize I haven't seen most of these movies. This is ridiculous. I haven't seen so many of these. I didn't know there was an Assault on Arkham. I missed that. Flashpoint, of course, is great. Doom, I didn't really care for Doom that much. I didn't know there was a Harley Quinn movie. I'm actually really interested in the ones that they did with the original Batman TV cast. The Meets Two-Face.
Adam West.
Yeah. The first one was great. I loved it. I'm curious as to, you know, what the second one's going to be.
Okay, I got to show that to my dad. He on it every time, like when he was flipping through the channels and the old Adam West TV show comes on, he watches the entire fucking episode.
Nice.
But yeah, and again, as far as it goes for Justice League, I mean it's a Zack Snyder movie, so I can't really expect too much of story, but action and character, I'm pretty sure what does save it and why it is good is because of Joss Whedon and Geoff Johns.
Yeah, I'm hoping it all works out, because there's a lot of money, there's a lot of stuff riding on it. If this movie connects, then we're going to have a Flash, Cyborg, Aquaman movie. I've never been a huge Cyborg fan, but I think it's because he's just never given enough meat. The Teen Titans during the 80s were as hot as the X-Men, and somewhere along the way they just died in popularity. Then Young Justice took over. The Teen Titans has always kind of been there. I hate that cartoon. I know people who love it, but I cannot stand it.
Oh, hey, go.
What? Oh, Teen Titans Go. Yeah, it's so cutesy. It makes me want to pukey.
Oh, God. I know. It's pretty much turned into Uncle Grandpa or Adventure... Not even Adventure Time. There's like no action. It's all goofball shit. But there was one episode that I thought was funny because it was dedicated to the Goonies.
Oh, really? I did not. Cyborg is...
Yeah, you do. You live up there in Oregon. I'm somewhat jealous. But now, Cyborg, in the New 52, he's... been upgraded to a member of the Justice League.
Oh, good, good.
Fucking awesome. And it makes sense because, you know, he's fused with a mother box now, which is like the most advanced technological device out there. And it's Apocalyptian, so he has access to anything and can, like, retrofit anything technological to him. He can override, he can break through, and he has advanced weaponry. He can fuck shit up.
I think we kind of wrapped it up, so I guess we won't be doing a Justice League Unlimited episode, but, you know, I would be surprised. You know, we've been talking about the end of Back in Toons and launching kind of a nerd show, like where we just talk about everything in the nerd universe. Makes it easier to put together an episode, more consistent. We might revisit some Justice League Unlimited, I don't know. But, Jacob, thank you for another great episode. Sorry about the wait, everybody.
Oh, hey, no, it's all good. I'm definitely happy to be a part of it. Oh, and if we do a Justice League Unlimited episode, there's one episode I'd really like to talk about, mainly because I'm a huge Batman fan, but it really did show his importance within the team. Oh my god, okay. It was perfectly done. And it also involves like Batman Beyond as well. I thought it was a really great episode. Yeah, when I look up the title of the episode, I'll let you know what it is.
All right, everybody, check us out on Facebook under Back in Toons. That is the page designed for all of our podcasts that are animation and comic book oriented. And Jacob, send us out.
All right, everybody, have a good night. Namaste and good luck. And let's just hope Justice League kicks ass. I'm sure it will. God damn you, Danny Elfman, for making us such an awesome score.
Yeah.
All right. Namaste and good luck, you guys.